Okay, I'm going to call House Finance to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:34 p.m. on Wednesday, February 5th, 2020. And present today, we've got Representative Knopp, Representative Lebon, Representative Tilton, Representative Carpenter, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Johnston, Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Josephson, Representative Merrick, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. Just a reminder, folks could please mute their cell phones. And today we will have an overview of HB 234, the Governor's Supplemental Request for FY20, by Neil Steininger, Director of the Office of Management and Budgets. And since this is our only item on the agenda, committee members, please feel free to ask questions as we move through the presentation. So I'd like to invite Mr. Steininger up to the table. And looks like you've got a lot of lifelines here. Thank you for being here today. I know that there are members from various departments here in the room to assist with answering questions. So feel free to call on anybody that you would like to also join you. And so with that, if you could put yourself on the record and please proceed.
For the record, Neil Steininger, Director, Office of Management and Budget. And I would like to say thank you to the room full of subject matter experts here to assist me if you have questions. So our supplemental budget bill that we've proposed is split into two parts. The first part is to address items that have a urgent need for additional funding or are related to emergency response. So these are items where the cash needs of the program are, you know, such that we will run out of money to cover these programs in the near future. There's a second part, which are kind of what we're referring to as a regular supplemental items. These are items that are, you know, not as urgent, however, they are still sufficiently urgent to be required in as a supplemental in FY20. So those urgent and emergency-related items add to $241.9 million in unrestricted general funds. The regular items are $20.6 million in unrestricted general funds. All together, that's $262.5 million in unrestricted general funds. When you add in requests for federal receipt authority, it's $507.9 million with all funds together.
And I'd just like to note for the record, Representative Wool has also joined us. Please continue.
So do... put that amount in context, the FY 2019 budget inclusive of supplementals for UGF was about $4.9 billion. Our FY 20 budget inclusive of these supplemental asks is about $4.7 billion. And the FY 21 governor's budget is proposing a spending level of $4.6 billion. So that is a reduction of $238.8 million between FY19 to FY20, inclusive of supplemental requests.
And Mr. Commissioner, FY19 and FY20, I'm just thinking we're anticipating in 21 oil tax credits, whether that's statutory payment or possibly debt service, depending on how the courts rule on that. But in FY20, we also, I'm just trying to get an apples to apples. FY20, there was no payments in there in 19. Maybe if you could talk about that a little bit.
In Chair Foster, in terms of the amount for.
Right, like whether or not those are included in 19 and 20.
Off the top of my head, I don't know the amount of. That was included in FY19, but this is the full picture of unrestricted general fund spent in FY19.
Right, and so I'm thinking, assuming, and I don't know that this will occur, but for example, the governor may, when he does his amendments, add in another $55 million for debt service on the oil tax credits when those come out in about 2 weeks or so. And if that does occur, then that would bring that $4.6 billion for FY21 up to $4.65 billion, and I guess I'm just throwing that out as a commentary for folks just to keep that in mind, but not necessarily a question. With that, please continue.
So this slide details the items that we've identified as being urgent or emergency response items. The first item listed is $110.5 million for fire suppression. A bulk of this is money already spent to fight fires. In addition, there's $16 million in anticipated expenditures for spring fire suppression. In the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, there's $158,000 to address the Dalton Highway Anticum Pass for road maintenance. There's also a reappropriation, really a scope change for the Nick Goose Bay Road. There's an existing project for $2 million that's very specific to one section of the road. We've removed that restriction to allow repairs to ruts in the milepost 1 to milepost 7 section of the road to address a high accident section of that road. There's also $3 million in expenditures that have been made for earthquake relief that are ineligible for federal reimbursement. So this is to backfill that lack in federal reimbursement. At the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, there's a reappropriation of $900,000 for a mass notification system. There's also the possibility for some federal revenue to go along with this. In Department of Health and Social Services, in the Medicaid program, there's a need for $128.3 million to get us through the end of fiscal year 20. And I have a couple more slides that go a little bit more into detail on, you know, the reason for that supplemental need.
Okay, Representative LeBon and then Johnston.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Commissioner, on the Military and Veterans Affairs reapportionment, what's the timeline for implementation of that project?
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, I'm actually going to have to look to a lifeline in the room for the timeline on that.
And if you could put yourself on the record.
Good afternoon, committee. Greg Christensen, Deputy Commissioner, Military and Veterans Affairs. So with this reappropriation, we would begin the work in FY 20 and then continue that through FY 21.
Follow up
would be, is this being done with existing personnel, or are you hiring out additional personnel to get this done?
So, Representative LeBon, through the chair, yes, we would be contracting that out.
And how much of this appropriation is for that contracting element?
Through the chair, there's a Fed-State split, approximately 50-50. Although it depends on the building that we're talking about. Some buildings have slightly different depending on the usage between state and Fed. We're looking at a total cost somewhere between 1.3, 1.8 million for the whole project. And so our split will be approximately half that, 100.
Thank you.
Representative Johnston.
Yes, I was wondering as far as the fire suppression. You said $16 million is anticipated. Is that going to be part of our headroom for this coming budget cycle, or you're thinking $16 million is, first of all, something that we might need with fires that are still burning underground?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, the $16 million is to cover spring fires that would occur during FY20. So to your question, that does increase the FY20 need. So they could be existing fires or fires that are.
And then the total amount, I know that with the fire suppression, we have state and federal split. This is all, at this point, as close as we can get to know what the state allocation is as far as cost for fire suppression. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Please continue.
So the Medicaid program, through the FY20 budget development process, was developed based on ambitious goals for savings targets made by Health and Social Services. Starting with that process, there was a projected need under the kind of status quo Medicaid program of $683 million to cover the program is what the projection was made in November of 2018, so going into development of that budget. Through the legislative process, the appropriation was brought down to $574.6 million and then further vetoed down to $516.3 million. The department had a lot of various ways to, achieve these savings. A lot of plans based on their knowledge at the time and their knowledge of what was understood to be optional services. So through the execution of the budget this year and through actually attempting to implement a lot of those changes, a lot of the changes ran into difficulty with working with other stakeholders and other partners, either at the federal government or within the medical provider community. And so not all of those savings were able to be realized. Some services that the department sought to be optional at the time when they attempted to work with Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services found that those services weren't actually truly optional. So through all of those efforts, the ambitious savings goal from that projected amount from November of 2018, the ambitious savings goal of $166.7 million, they were able to save $38.4 million. So while there is that $128 million increase, that does reflect significant savings and significant successful efforts made by the department, just not every effort was.
Representative Johnston?
Yes, in this fast-track supplemental, are you taking into account the lawsuit with the providers, and are they part of this fast-track amount?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, that is built into the supplemental need that the department is projecting.
For the fast-track?
Yes.
Thank you. Do we know how much that settlement is? Have we?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, about $9 million. UGF.
Thank you.
So this chart is showing a projection of where the Medicaid program kind of the cash needs of the Medicaid program through the rest of the year. And what you can see, the blue line is representative of, spending to date as well as projected spending. And it shows you that we're projecting that the Medicaid program will run out of funds to reimburse providers towards the end of March, early April. The weekly spending in the Medicaid program is projected at about $13.8 million. So adding in that supplemental, you can see in the orange line, just puts us at a point where we will make it through the end of June. So this last statement here, insufficient funding to get through the last quarter of FY 2020, really is a fairly optimistic statement. Truly, we may have insufficient funding to get through the third quarter of FY 2020. This next slide was actually requested after our overview that we presented a couple weeks ago on the FY 21 budget. So we've included it here just to illustrate the program's history and the growth in both the number of beneficiaries and the cost of the program, inclusive of all funds.
I got a question, Representative Johnston and then Ortiz.
Yes.
Johnston and then Ortiz.
Yes, thank you for providing this chart, and actually the department has also provided us with it. And the story that it's telling that is relevant here is that actually the state is serving more people at the same cost. And we just felt that we needed to have the full picture between UGF and federal receipts, and the population has grown, but the state's cost has not. Thank you.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And actually, my comments were very similar to Representative Johnson's. And, you know, it's 100,000 more people that are being served at no additional state cost. So that's a applaud the department, I guess. Thank you.
Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to chime in on that point as well. But not only serving more people at the same state cost roughly, but there's a lot more money coming into the economy that is benefiting everybody. It's an economic boost as well for the same state investment. With the federal ad, with the expansion population, there's a lot more clinics opening up.
Representative Johnston.
In wrap up, I think we also, at this point, need to acknowledge that where we are serving more people at the same UGF funding, we also, I think, have learned a very valuable lesson with this formula program. It's not one that we can cut our way out of. It's one that we have to negotiate with our partners, in particular the federal government and CMS, to make changes. And I know the department knows this now. I know OMB knows this now. But thus, our big supplemental, we have to acknowledge that you can't do it with a budget cut.
Please continue.
So the next section, we're going to discuss we've considered the regular supplemental items. These are items that, you know, are still urgent enough to need to be included in fiscal year 20. Some are items that for technical reasons have a supplemental effective date, but they are not items that have a, you know, immediate pending need. In the Department of Administration, there's $1.7 million for caseload growth in the Office of Public Advocacy. There's also $50,000 for document security and preservation systems at the DMV related to documents coming in for Real ID. And then there's also a move of their Anchorage office location. Both of those items are coming from DMV receipts. In the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, we have a Housing and Urban Development Community Block Grant. This is related to disaster recovery from the calendar year 18 earthquake. That's $38.9 million in federal receipts. There's also an update to the NPRA, the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska Impact Grant Program, adding $6.7 million of federal receipts. In the Department of Corrections, there is carry-forward language added related to the federal mandate billing collections. These are monies received from federal inmates in state correctional facilities. Language was added to access kind of prior year collections, excess collections of that fund to address supplemental needs in population management. Additionally, we've included language to extend the appropriation for the Palmer Correctional Center for reopening of that facility. Reopening of that facility will take 12 to 18 months, I believe, and so it's going to cross across fiscal years, so we need to extend the lapse date of that appropriation. In the Department of Education and Early Development, there's an additional $10 million in federal receipt authority. This is for receipt of federal title grants and to ensure that we're able to, you know, obligate those grants to go out to school districts. There's also the addition of $100,000 in unrestricted general funds and $150,000 in program receipt authority for operations of the Mount Edgecombe Aquatic Center. In the Office of the Governor, there is $18,000 related to public hearings on voter initiatives. It's also $215,000 related to those voter initiatives for certification and translation. In the capital section of the supplemental bill, there is a $3.7 million project out of the election fund for Help America Vote Act. This is related to election security related purchases. In the Department of Health and Social Services, there's $1 million additional amount for the payment assistance program at the Alaska Pioneer Home. This is to ensure that all residents who require payment assistance in the homes receive payment assistance. There's $6 million to achieve full capacity at the Alaska Psychiatric Institute. And there's also $8.6 million for the Adult Public Assistance Program to meet maintenance of effort requirements.
Representative Johnston?
Yes, just for the record, as far as the Alaska Pioneer Homes, when will they be running out of money? What's the time sensitivity of the $1 million?
Ms. Ziefert, if you could put yourself on the record.
Good afternoon, committee. For the record, my name is Santa Eford. I'm Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services. Pioneer Homes, we will be able to get through the majority of the year. This is not as time sensitive, so we could operate later into the fiscal year before we would need this funding.
So it might be sometime in June?
I would say probably yes, end of May to June. We are actually spending about $2.3 million on average per month out of the payment assistance program to support the Pioneer Homes needs for the residents that need the financial assistance.
And off the top of my head right now, I can't remember what we budgeted for payment assistance.
We budgeted currently at the current budget amount is $25.9 million. And this additional would give us the additional $1 million in this.
Okay.
So it would be the $26.9 million. With looking at our revenue, our projections are saying we might need a little bit more than that, but we are being very conservative with the $1 million request.
Could I do a follow-up?
Follow-up?
Not on this exact one, but as far as restored adult public assistance payment, again, this is my understanding, this is something that we partner with the federal government on. Did we assume any extra cost when we actually tried to change the maintenance of effort on this, or will this just be our clear cost?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, there are a couple of pieces of the change in the adult public assistance. The two that actually affect the payments were and I don't want to get into too much detail, but stop me if this is too much, that we were trying to change the methodology for the maintenance of effort amount through our adult public assistance program, which is a match for the Medicaid program.
Mm-hmm.
We were changing to the 1983 standard. When we put in a state plan amendment for that, CMS looked at that and said they are able to look at other pieces of that program that are included in that same page or information on the program, and they began to ask us some questions about another calculation that we had been doing for these payments since 1995, and we were asked to make a correction. We were making a miscalculation on those payments. So there was a double whammy to the recipients of this program that the governor felt was not acceptable to reduce their payments. Therefore, we are coming and asking for the additional money to be added back for 20 to keep the current methodology for the maintenance of effort which is the total expenditures with a cost of living increase on top of that that's also calculated. As far as the administrative cost, we are not asking for any additional administrative cost in this. This component is totally budgeted as grants. It goes out as payments to the beneficiaries. However, the cost to the department is redirecting resources to another area. So it could just affect some of the ways that our staff are working. They may have been focused on something else and we had to divert them to redo calculations, but we are not requesting additional administrative costs.
Okay, thank you. And just one follow-up on that. Again, as far as time sensitivity to this one, since it is benefits.
I would say it is the end of the fiscal year.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Knopp, and then Ortiz, and then Josephson.
Thank you, Chair Foster. So Pioneer Home, so we did some rate restructuring through the last budget. Did that cost us in occupancy rates? Is our occupancy still full, declined? What happened when we made all the adjustments?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, and I'm not the program side, and so I don't want to misrepresent, but I believe there were 16 residents that have left the homes associated with this, but they have been, but then we've been able to fill those slots through the wait list of other residents wanting to come into the homes.
And I guess I was trying to figure that out, if that move actually cost us in residency and if it affected the revenue stream coming in, and now we're seeking additional funds because the cost of operating will pretty much not always patient-based or resident-based, you know, I mean, you have some fixed cost operating. I was just wondering if that was a reason that we need additional funds. Actually, I'm a little pleased because you're asking for less than I thought you would be. So I'm just curious, do you know, did it have an impact on our revenue, that rate change?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, we've actually seen an increase in our revenue based on the increase in rates. However, because we never know exactly the income status of an individual that will come into the homes, it's a projection from this point in time forward about who may actually run out of assets that are currently on private pay that might need assistance. So it's our best projection of who will be in the homes during the rest of this fiscal year and their capability to pay.
Thank you.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the same slide, the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, the request to add authority to achieve full capacity at $6 million. Does this have to do with the expansion of the contract with WellPath in particular?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, this includes a continuation of the contract with WellPath. If you remember, we entered into the contract with WellPath in FY19 at $1 million a month. It has been reduced to $750,000 a month. The current contract goes through March 31st with an option to renew going forward if that is needed to continue the stabilization of the API.
Paula?
And is that contract based on capacity or on the actual use of the facility? Like last year in the supplemental, they tried to get, you know, money based on a fixed price per bed, $80 per bed capacity or 80 bed capacity, even though the beds weren't being used at the time. So can you answer that?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I do not have the contract right in front of me to know all of the exact deliverables, so I would like to get back to you on that specific information. I know that WellPath is continuing to be a part of the stabilization of API and helping us meet all the requirements that came forward in those surveys looking at our certification and our licensing.
Okay, I appreciate seeing that. Thank you.
Representative Josephson?
My question was answered. Thank you.
Please continue.
In the Department of Law, there's the reopening of the Katavik District Attorney's Office at $150,000. This is a relationship with the community to support having that district attorney's office open. And in the Criminal Division, Criminal Appeals, and Special Litigation, we have a $250,000 grant from in federal receipts to expand prosecutions in rural Alaska.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, through the chair. I was pretty involved in helping motivate the legislature to reopen the Ukiavik office. They've been unable to hire someone so far. There's another funding source, it's $300,000 from the North Slope Borough. But they're having some recruitment, not some, significant recruitment and retention problems. I'm just curious, given that context, what this $150,000 is for.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I believe this reflects the partial year portion of the $300,000 being a full year.
Please continue.
In the Department of Natural Resources, there's $76,000 in DGF for aquatic farm application processing. There's been a significant increase in the number of applications and the aquatic farm activity in the state. In the Department of Public Safety, there are several requests related to meeting operating needs for law enforcement as well as safety equipment for new troopers totaling $6.7 million. There's also a capital request for FAA required aircraft equipment at $105,000 and radio replacements related to those new troopers coming out of the academies at $500,000.
Representative LeBond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under personal services for this request is $2.9 million, and maybe you might need to get a lifeline on this one, but just curious how much of that is overtime, or do you know?
Commissioner Price, if you could put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Amanda Price, Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety. Sir, I don't have the answer as to the specific percent of the number that you reflected and what percent is generated by overtime. What I do have, sir, is that our overtime costs from FY18 to FY19 increased 26%, and from FY19 to FY20, we are projecting another increase of 9% due to the shortage of staffing that the department has experienced.
Follow-up? As you are more successful in recruiting and retaining troopers, your vacancy factor changes. If you are more successful and you're bringing on new additional troopers to fill vacant positions, does that necessarily mean less overtime is paid, or can I connect those dots and that's not automatic?
Representative LeBond, through the chair, theoretically you are correct. I don't believe this department has ever been in a position that we are in now, which is that every single one of our PCNs is going to be filled and then some. So the implication to the overtime hours that we are required to serve in order to respond to Alaskans in need, I do believe there's a correlation, but I can't make a mathematical correlation because historically we simply haven't had it. What I can say, sir, is common sense tells me as I hire troopers, as I train troopers, as I have the opportunity to deploy troopers, my overtime hours will decrease. I would like to just state for the record that there is a significant lag time from the day that we hire a trooper through their training academy, their FTEP, their training time at a training post before they're deployed to rural communities. So it takes about 18 months. So as we forecast our economic impact of this in about 18 months, we will know what the impact of the almost 100 troopers that we are able to hire between last year and this year will be for our state.
One more follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Fiscal year 2019, there's a shortfall of nearly $2 million. Does that connect or influence or affect in any way the shortfall you're looking at here today? Are they totally independent events? Or is that a fair question?
Representative Laban, through the chair, I don't know the answer to that, sir, off the top of my head. I don't know if that the shortfall in FY19 was personal service related. So what I do know, sir, in full transparency, the department has not historically represented to the body an accurate and clear representation of how the funding is spent in terms of personal services. So, for example, the department has budgeted for 100 hours of overtime per trooper without taking a real look at the actual number of overtime hours on an aggregate total, say an average of 3 years, which is what we're doing now. It's much more responsible to look at the actual number of overtime hours that we are expending versus just a number of 100 hours per trooper. So my best guess, sir, and I could certainly get back to you, is that that number is an aggregate total reflecting the department's historic lack of preparation and the overtime that we know that we need to deploy.
Thank you for that response, in all fairness to the commissioner. We're going through the Department of Public Safety's budget and subcommittee level, and I've been asking these types of questions here for the last week or so. So we will be meeting again here in the very near future, so I won't take any more of this committee's time here on that topic, but thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Josephson, and then Wohl.
Yes, Commissioner, just very briefly so that we don't go too far on tangent, but you're having great success, is what I'm hearing, hiring new state troopers. And just very briefly, what do you attribute that to? Is it the pay rate increase they've enjoyed? What is it that is going on that we want to mirror?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, there's a significant number of factors that contribute to the success that we are having in-house. Separate issues. Recruitment is an issue, retention is an issue. I have a significant body of work that I could reflect to the committee in writing that details what the comprehensive work that's been completed by the department in the last year as it relates to retention specifically is. Most of those efforts directly correlate to information that we collected via survey from the actual body of our department. Those findings and recommendations delivered by the work group that addressed a myriad of concerns that the department was struggling with, primarily surrounding the issue of morale, sir. So certainly the elevation in pay creates an opportunity for us to attract talent. It also creates an opportunity for us to retain talent, but without question, the morale and the culture that was in the department is what needed to be addressed, and that is what we have addressed comprehensively. We at this point have implemented and deployed about 95% of the recommendations that the Department of Public Safety members presented to management. And in terms of recruitment, the recruitment arena is where the salary increase is showing to have the most significant impact. However, we also have a significant culture change within our recruitment department. The culture shift, which sounds as though it's not perhaps a big deal, but it actually is in this realm. The culture was such that applicants that were applying to the Department of Public Safety were treated as though they would be lucky if they made it through, which is true. It is a prestigious, nationally renowned law enforcement agency. However, the culture that we have in our recruitment office now is much more of a customer service based approach. It is informing and communicating effectively with our recruits so that they and their families are well aware of the process along the way, of what the expectation is as it relates to a polygraph test, what the expectation is going to be as it relates to deploying in rural Alaska. And we have acknowledged that that has returned us a significant investment, to include the fact that our fall B hiring cycle is about 360 invitations for background checks as compared to 2017 fall B, which is 70 invitations for backgrounds.
Representative Wohl, and then Laban.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Price, on that same topic, are you spending more on recruitment? Did you hire any additional people for your recruitment team?
Representative Wohl, through the chair, no.
So the recruitment spending has been flat since the year before.
Representative Wohl, through the chair, I have not hired additional people in my recruitment unit. The recruitment spending, I can't speak to at this moment, but I could certainly get that to you.
Okay, I'd be interested in that. And of all the people that apply, what percentage are accepted? I mean, of 100 people apply to be a trooper, how many of that group would make it.
Representative Wolf, through the chair, that varies by hiring cycle.
By hiring cycle, okay. So do you you don't have a percentage of rejections? You know, 1,000 people apply and you end up hiring 100 or something like that?
With the invitation of the chair, I have Colonel Barlow online. Colonel Barlow.
Colonel Barlow, if you could put yourself on the record.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Brian Barlow, Director of the Alaska State Troopers within the Department of Public Safety. To answer your question, Representative, again, it is a very low percentage. I can't provide a very specific number, but you use a number of 1,000 applicants and how many get hired. If it's 1,000 applicants, you know, typically a very low number, 1 to 3% of that, I think, is what we're looking at in terms of actual hires at the end of the hiring cycle.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And one last question on that topic, if I may.
Absolutely.
If someone applies and has to take a background check or any kind of exams, and then they don't get hired, do they have to? Are they paying for those exams or tests up front? And is that out of their own pocket?
Representative Wolf, through the chair, no.
Follow-up. So the department pays for any application, any fees incurred through applying for the job?
Through the chair, yes.
Thank you.
Very succinct, quick answers there.
Hi, sir.
Representative LeBon.
Since we got on recruitment and vacancies and whatnot, I thought I'd take one last bite of the apple. If your vacancy factor going into a budget year is set at a certain percentage, say 4.5%, and you're more successful in the sense that you recruit quicker, you hire, train, place, and retain troopers at a more successful rate, are you building into your budget a shortfall at the end of the budget year?
Representative LeBon, through the chair, am I building into my budget a shortfall? So I heard sort of two separate questions, vacancy factor related and then building in a shortfall.
Maybe I can help clarify this. So the vacancy factor assumes you're going to have so many vacant positions during the year. 35. What happens if you have only 20 on average during the year versus 35? Are you creating a budget shortfall?
Representative LeBon, through the chair, the position that we find ourselves in this year is, and I'm looking forward to the meeting that we have on Thursday, sir, so I can walk through these numbers with you. I know this has been of particular interest. We are anticipating that we are going to have about 40 PCNs filled over the number of PCNs that we currently have authorized, including the 15 PCNs that we're asking for FY21. So we are in a position that the department has never historically been in, where we have to make the state, the lawmakers have to make a decision about what is an effective number of Alaska State Troopers and inform the department at what point you would like us to stop recruiting and retaining. And I hope that that's not the case this year, because we certainly recognize the need, the desperate need, to increase our presence.
Representative Sullivan-Leonard.
Thank you, through the chair. Commissioner, if we could probably stick with the supplemental piece here. Could you please give us some information, further information, with regard to the radio replacement request here for the UGF, if you would, please?
Representative Sullivan-Leonard, through the chair. Mr. Chairman, at your invitation, if we could have the Deputy Commissioner step forward to answer that question.
Deputy Commissioner, if you could put yourself on the record.
Leon Morgan, Deputy Commissioner, Public Safety. Through the chair, Representative Sullivan-Leonard. Right now, we're looking at, we need to buy both a combination of portable radios and vehicle radios to replace our fleet of radios. What we find ourselves in is we're looking at 50 portable radios and 63 vehicle radios. Right now, the 50 portable radios will go to recruits coming out of this academy, recruits going into the fall academy, and then we like to keep a inventory of usually 10% of our portable fleet in reserve for repairs and things like that. We are not anywhere near that 10% in reserve. We're actually like at 8 portable radios in reserve. The portable radios that these 50 are replacing are in what we call break-fix mode. We can't repair them anymore. They're all 10-plus years old. Same for our vehicle radios. We're operating vehicle radios in 63 of our vehicles. that are currently about 15 years old. They're called AstroSpectra radios with W9 controlled heads, if you want to go down that road of the technical stuff. And we need to replace those radios as well, as they are not meeting current security upgrade requirements, and we can't repair them anymore. So,
follow up.
Just a comment. Thank you so much, and thank you, Commissioner. We appreciate all of your work. Truly.
Thank you, Representative.
While we've got you up here, do you know if the FAA required aircraft equipment? Is that IFR instruments for the aircraft, or do you know, have any idea what that is? And if not, that's not a big deal.
Through the chair, sorry. Yes, actually, that's for ADS-B compliance, sir. That's for the remainder of our aircraft that we're going to need to fly into Class C airspace. That's not for all of our aircraft in the aircraft section. One of our caravans, three of our 206s, I believe one of our R-44s need to be upfitted. That's going to have to go in the Class C airspace.
That's for ADS-B, you said?
Yes, sir, ADS-B okay. compliance.
I'm looking at my fellow pilot over there. Thank you. Okay, any other questions on public safety? I don't see any. Thank you very much,
Mr. Chairman.
To both of you. Commissioner or OMB Director, I keep doing that.
In the Department of Revenue, in the Tax Division, there's $400,000 fund source change. The tax revenue management system formerly was supported through a capital project for its implementation. That capital project has run out in fiscal year 20, so we need to move that into the operating budget. There's also $350,000 for fiscal year 20 through 22 for tax subject matter experts for economic and legal analysis to assist the economic research group within the tax division. And in the commissioner's office, there's $104,000 for technology refresh, space utilization, and planning.
Question from Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under the category of the tax subject matter experts, I think you quickly stated the type of experts, and can we assume that, can you repeat the type of experts that you're recruiting, and then can we safely assume that we just don't have that kind of expertise currently?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, so these are economic and legal experts to assist existing staff at the Department of Revenue to expand capacity to look into different tax subject matters that the department feels will be before it over the next couple fiscal years.
And we don't currently have that kind of expertise?
We do not. Not at the level that the department believes will be necessary.
Thank you.
Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You just said of tax and legal matter, or economic and legal analysis about tax subjects over the next few years. Is that a change? What are you anticipating? Is there a change you're anticipating, or are you just doing research?
Through the chair,
is the department, I guess, not you.
actually,
Mr. Barnhill, if you could put yourself on the record.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Mike Barnhill, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Revenue. Through the chair, to be quite candid, we are actually hoping at the Department of Revenue that folks here in the legislature would like to take up the subject of new or incremental changes to existing taxes. In specific, perhaps we could talk about sales taxes. Right now, the department does not have the expertise it needs to support a vigorous and robust discussion about sales taxes within this building. And so we'll be looking for legal experts to potentially review legislation that could be proposed, perhaps even draft legislation that could be proposed, as well as economic experts that can opine on direct and indirect impacts to the Alaska economy.
Thank you. Any questions?
I just want to say thank you for your candid answer.
You bet.
Thank you, Mr. Barnhill. No questions, please continue.
In the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, there's a technical fund source change to replace capital funding with unified carrier registration receipts in the measurement standards section. In the marine highway system, there's $7 million for vessel operations as to maintain service based on some cost increases in that system. There's also $5 million in the capital section for vessel overhaul. There was a lot of additional work found as some of the boats were in layup this year. There's also a $3.2 million capital project related to Department of Public Safety patrol vehicle purchases. This is just to allow additional authority to access money that's been paid into the state equipment fleet fund.
Representative Briefides. And House Finance, back on record, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back to the Marine Highway and the $7 million, I notice it's DGF, so is that like $7 million of increased receipt authority? What is that?
Through the Chair, Representative Ortiz, both the $7 million in the operating budget and the $5 million in the capital budget are the Marine Highway System Fund. So that's a fund where receipts from the system are collected into that fund, as well as occasional deposits from other sources.
And can you tell me, or is there anybody in the room who can tell me, how much is in that fund right now?
Through the Chair, Representative Ortiz, we'll get back to you with the fund balance.
And another question would be, of the $7 million under operating total, would this go to expand operations, expand schedules? Do you know what the purpose of the $7 million would be?
So through the Chair, Representative Ortiz, it's not to expand schedules. It's to ensure that the schedule that's been set can be met. There's been cost increases, unforeseen cost increases in the system running, you know, in some cases related to these overhauls where boats have had to stay in overhaul for longer. You end up running a boat that may be more expensive on a route that you weren't planning to. There's also been some increases in fuel costs, and I believe there's been a couple of chartered runs as well.
And I'll follow up.
Follow up.
And under the capital total of $5 million, I assume that would be for repair of vessels, and am I correct in that assumption?
Through the Chair, Representative Ortiz, yes, that's correct.
And do we know how much this $5 million would represent in terms of the total need that's there for repair of vessels? In other words, how much is this going to help the situation?
Through the Chair, are you asking for like a kind of deferred maintenance backlog on all the vessels?
You requested $5 million for capital, which I appreciate. Believe me, I'm supportive of repairing the Marine Highway System. How much will that help to address the need?
Mr. Pannone, if you could put yourself on the record.
For the record, my name is Dom Pannone, the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. So the capital request here helps us with costs, increased costs on our capital overhaul site this year that we incurred that we need to finish out the rest of the year as we had planned. So the supplemental request is to cover the additional costs so that we can meet our commitment for the rest of the fiscal year, our service commitment.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, Representative Knopp and then Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So where do I want to start? Through the Chair, I guess my first question would be, so the last Marine Highway vessel overhaul at $5 million, is that a particular vessel, or is that numerous vessels? I mean, what is that? What's that one?
Mr. Pannone?
Through the chair. Representative Knopp, that $5 million was due to a significant amount of unanticipated rusted steel in the La Conti. The Columbia had rudder and hub and engine vibration issues, and any additional repair needs in the Testamina and Kennecott.
So I guess because that, thank you, follow up, Mr. Chairman. So I mean, it raises the question because obviously we've got a lot of bolts down right now, and so is this going to get them back in service, or are we going to operate them? Because, you know, we're looking at the additional $7 million in DGF funds for operating total, but I don't remember there being a funding increase request for the FY21 budget. So I'm kind of wondering, what are we planning on operating, and do we have enough funding requests in there to do that, even if we have these things functional? I guess is where I'm going with that question.
Through the chair, this request is only to allow the system to complete the year with the current schedule, with the current obligation.
Follow up?
Okay, so I'm not going to go down the rabbit trail here, but so we get them, we finish out the year doing some maintenance, we finish out the year, and then we just may park them, right, if we haven't requested additional funding for the FY21 year. I mean, that's kind of where I'm going with this question. And I don't do the transportation budget, but it seemed like I didn't see any difference in the funding request for the FY21. Somebody may be able to answer that question for me, but I think it's...
Through the chair, these repairs that this supplemental would cover, those boats would continue to operate in the next year. The governor's proposed budget for fiscal year 2021 did have a $4.7 million increase, and the department is working with the legislature on answering questions on specific funding scenarios for next year regarding our capital and operating needs.
Fair enough. Thank you. One more follow-up, Mr.
Follow-up?
So in the DPS patrol vehicles, so anybody that manages fleet vehicles knows that you have a sequential rotation time. So I'm wondering why the big request to replace the patrol vehicles now. We usually typically do that throughout a cycle. And so,
through the chair, Representative Knopp, this is a... an increase in the fleet size due to increased number of troopers, and you know, the department might want to speak a little bit more to that if needed.
Purchase of new vehicles, but not replacement. Is that what we're doing?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, you're correct in the statewide equipment fleet generally is, you know, replacement on depreciation paid in, and then this is have in addition to some of that replacement vehicles, new vehicles being added into the DPS fleet. As we have new troopers, they need new cars.
Representative LeBond.
And actually, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question was also about the DPS vehicles. The funding source says other. Do you want to define what other means?
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, other is the Highway Equipment Working Capital Fund. So that fund is paid into by agencies, and so the statewide equipment fleet tracks how much each agency is paying in based on the vehicles that they have, and that kind of builds a credit, so to speak, for each agency. So this $3.2 million is to allow DPS to access more of its credits than otherwise is in that base FY20 budget.
All up. So in essence, DOT purchases the patrol vehicles, then the Department of Public Safety remits, I'm going to call it a lease payment for lack of any other term. They lease the vehicle from DOT and use it in the performance of their duties. Is that a fair statement then?
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, that's a fairly, simple way of putting it, yes.
And one last. And in this arrangement, there's a lagging effect. So DOT purchases the vehicle, whether it's new for a newly hired trooper or a replacement vehicle, because they, over time, they wear out. regardless of what category it falls into, Department of Public Safety begins returning to that capital account money on a annual basis, quarterly, monthly, or do you know, or does it matter?
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, I believe the bill is done on an annual basis from the statewide equipment fleet. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Josephson and then Wool.
Thank you, and let me begin by asking for your indulgence. So, you know, each legislator knows what they know, and the ferry system budget is not my forte, but I'm curious. You said the DGF source is the Marine Highway System Fund, and I'm curious whether the $7 million and the $5 million are dollars that exist right now today in the fund.
Through the chair, it's my understanding that the fund has, from memory, approximately $20 million. That's not a, I can get the number to you, but the funds we're requesting are in the fund right at this time.
Follow up.
So you're asking authority to spend money that it's not a classical DGF situation like a tuition increase at the university that would be new dollars. These are existing dollars, and you want authority to spend them. It's sort of that simple, right?
Through the chair, Representative, correct. This is spending from the fund that that collects the revenues from the ferry system.
Just a comment that it's frustrating given the status of affairs with our 12 vessels or 11 vessels that there wasn't some forethought from all folks, not just the administration, about just having an open means of collecting this revenue when it was needed. But anyway, I'll leave that there.
Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. About the patrol vehicles, I just want to understand this, sort of following up on Representative LeBon's question. So the DOT owns the vehicles and has an arrangement with DPS. And would that be the same for the airplanes, too, that on the DPS page they wanted $150,000 or whatever for improvements to the airplane? Does the airplane reside in DOT as well?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, no, it's just the patrol vehicles, the cars.
Okay, so it's a separate category of yes. Transportation vehicles. Okay, thanks.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back again to the category of the Marine Highway and the DGF funds, so the estimate is that we think that there's approximately $20 million in the Marine Highway Operating Fund. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, it's 20 or 23 million.
Okay.
Yep, about.
Okay. And do you know anything about the history of that fund and whether that current balance before we make this further draw, where that current balance has been over the last number of years? It's my understanding that the Marine Highway Operating Fund has been kind of like the way that we use the CBR on a broader scale in terms of dealing with the cash flow issues and things like that. Do you know whether that fund, the history of that fund, whether that kind of balance, particularly after the $12 million, gets us down to about $8 million, or maybe 11 if there's 23, whether that's exceedingly low for the history of that balance?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I don't have that information with me today, but could provide it if you'd like.
Okay.
The $7 million in the operating for the DGF there, is any portion of that, does that cover lost revenue that was lost during the strike? Is that any piece of that is in there?
Chairman Foster, during the strike, we refunded $3.3 million in fares for fares that were in progress during the strike, for fares that were going to happen during the strike, and even for future fares with passenger uncertainty. We did not lose that authority in the AMHS. In our budget, but we refunded $3.3 $3.3 million in fares. And I believe for strike-specific related costs that we incurred, that was $2 million of unanticipated costs for the strike. And during the strike, we also saved $1.2 million of planned costs. So the vector there is $800,000 of increased need for authority. And so $800,000 of this request is for increased authority related to the strike.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Wohl and then Johnston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair. I think I heard you mention earlier that some of that funding was for leasing other vehicles. Would that be, for example, the barge that's being leased right now to bring stuff from Haines to Juneau since the ferry's broken down? I think one of you mentioned that some of these requested funds are for leasing or renting other vehicles. I'm assuming boats, barges or something.
Mr. Pinone?
So through the chair, Representative Wohl, I don't have the figures related to those costs. Those costs that may be in place of planned operating costs, but as far as the supplemental, I don't think those costs are built into this request.
Okay. Follow-up.
Follow-up?
Well, correct me if I heard wrong. Is there a leasing boat concept or is that done and under which circumstances if it is?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, I know that there have been some runs this season where we have worked with other commercial providers, but as far as the supplemental request, I'm not aware of the need to lease boats being part of the supplemental request.
Thank you.
Representative Johnston, and I think I saw another hand. Maybe not. Representative Johnston?
Yes, thank you. Through the chair. So this little over $7 million, if I'm understanding it correctly, is, of course, it's emergency funds for this year. It's to pay what the current ferry schedule was proposed for this year. And so it includes the lost opportunities and the cost of the strike, correct?
Through the chair, that is correct, Representative.
And does this also include the cost of changing the vessel out as far as the doors from so that it can be used? I'm trying to actually, and what I'm asking for, and I think what the whole committee is asking for, is a breakdown of what this $7 million is so we can see. And do you have that?
Through the chair, so the breakdown, as far as I have it here, is $800,000 of increased authority needed related to the strike, $1.6 million in higher operating costs of the Columbia due to project delays with the Matanuska. That was a repower and a major conversion that took twice as long as planned. $1.5 million of additional costs related to the Matanuska project with wage travel per diem. So $200,000 of this was added service to the Northern Panhandle, including costs related to operating the Angoon ramp. $110,000 was added service to the Haines for the Alcan 200 event. $400,000 is service to Prince Rupert, and that'll include 10 round trips this fiscal year. In that $400,000, $207,000 is for Royal Canadian Mounted Police required for customs. $193,000 is for fuel terminal staff over time, and this $400,000 is for 8 more round trips in May and June of this year, and 2 round trips that occurred in October and November of 2019.
And excuse me, those round trips were to?
Prince Rupert.
Okay, that, Prince that Rupert, was, thank you.
If you Prince could, Rupert. If you could get a copy of this list to the clerks and they can distribute right. that to the committee. I'm sorry, did you have more? On that?
There was more.
Thank you.
So that wasn't adding up yet.
1.8 million was due to an increase, a fuel increase. At the time of the budget for this year, the planned average was $2.36 per gallon, and that increased to $2.50 per gallon average. And the Marine Highway System uses 8.5 million gallons of fuel per year on average. $400,000 of this request was related to an underestimation of the required crew for the Teslina, and that's to pay for per diems and lodging in running the Teslina. And the remaining $250,000 is for the reshaping study.
The what studies?
The economic reshaping study.
Okay. Just to follow up on this.
Follow up.
I'm sorry to get into the weeds, but I was the fuel costs. Interests me because the service was cut, and so I was just wondering, I was surprised that that didn't just cancel out the additional fuel cost. I mean, you're not running an average year now.
Through the chair, I believe the calculated fuel costs were with the overall budget cut, and the fuel increases happened during the fiscal year. Creating this need for supplemental.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Ortiz?
Could we request that little overview that you just gave us in writing so that we can have it? I tried to write it all down, but you know, it would really help me if I could get it, not now, but when you can get to that, that'd be great.
Representative Josephson?
Thank you, through the chair. Does the administration have a plan? I'm assuming that most of the revenue comes in the summer through summer tourism. Do we have a plan to capture that revenue? Are we going to go after that revenue? Are we going to have boats on the water and bring those tourists into the Panhandle and the Gulf?
So through the chair, Representative Josephson, this is the amount of funding that would allow us to the Marine Highway System to provide the maximum level of service that they can provide right now for the rest of the fiscal year. Regarding the next fiscal year, that is still being discussed with the legislature.
Follow up. I guess I'm wondering. I'm not getting a good sense of what this will do between now and June 30th to put boats on the water. And I'm, you know, very likely to support it, but I don't have any sense of the answer to that. And what I do have a sense of is that it's not a series of sort of mistakes and errors and happenings. That the budget's been suffocated, and that's why, because this hasn't happened in my lifetime, to my knowledge, that's why there aren't boats on the water. So it's not just, you know, malfunction after malfunction, or strikes. It's a combination of these things as they relate to the budget cut. Is that a fair walking assumption?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the. Absent the problems with some of the vessels and delays in the repairs, the service as it was planned for this year likely wouldn't have required this much of a supplemental. A lot of those factors are what built into the $7 million need. This need is to ensure that we're able to actually provide the service as it was planned last year. So I don't think it's necessarily a result of the budget reductions last year. It's a result of unplanned items driving up the cost of providing the services we had anticipated it. And the $5 million in the capital is a result of, you know, items we didn't know until those boats went into layup. You know, we didn't necessarily have a full picture of, you know, what the steel in the LeConte looked like until it actually was in layup. And, you know, the budget cuts really didn't they don't affect the steel in the LeConte. That's, you know, just something we have to deal with based on the age of the vessels.
Okay. I mean, I assume that the service began, I think, in 1962, and that unplanned events occurred much earlier than 2019, that's to be expected, and something different happened, and I have a good sense of what that is. Thanks.
We got Representative Ortiz and then Sullivan Leonard.
Maybe just to add a little bit of clarification to what I hear you saying this money is for. Correct me if I'm wrong. You know, we went into this particular fiscal year with a budget that was reduced by $40 million after years of reductions prior to that to the system. And so that schedule of operations reflected that $40 million reduction. So we certainly saw a significant reduction in services as a result of that $40 million reduction. But what you're saying is that this money is just to get us so that we can meet the reduced schedule that was put forward by the system. Is that correct? The significantly reduced schedule that was put forward by the system, or by the Marine Highway System. Yeah.
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I believe that is correct. And to go further, these are the unanticipated expenses
that
we have experienced this year.
So by adding this money, we're not getting any added service. We're just getting the ability to meet that reduced service schedule that was put forward by the department after the cut was made.
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, correct.
Okay, that's great. Thanks.
Representative Solon Leonard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And because we are kind of getting into the weeds of this, you had mentioned on your list that is within the operating total of the $7 million DGF, you mentioned Haynes 200. Can you give me an overview of that and why it's within this particular line item?
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, I believe there were extra trips made by the ferry system to collect additional revenue. I don't have further information, but can provide what was behind that those trips.
Okay, I'd like that. Thank you.
Any further questions? So in this FY20 supplemental, it looks to me like some of it will be recurring. And for the recurring items, have those been put into the FY21 governor's proposed budget? And I'm just looking forward in terms of wanting to try to avoid another supplemental for these items next year. Do you know if those were put in, if they're recurring, if they've been put into the FY21 budget?
Chair Foster, any items that would be of a recurring nature we've tried to incorporate into the 21 budget. If, you know, there's other items of recurring nature, we'll determine whether, you know, there needs to be an adjustment. And to speak to a correction to a number given earlier, we received a note that the balance in the Marine Highway System Fund is approximately $30 million, just to correct that number. Yes.
Thank you. And my only last question is, on the sheet that we just received, it says there's $100,000 for the Alcan 200 snow machine race. Can you explain that one?
So, Chairman Foster, I may have misspoke about the location of that race, but that was the race I believe we were discussing with Representative Sullivan Leonard that I could provide more information on.
You asked that already.
At a later time.
I will claim I was making notes when that was spoken. Any further questions, comments? I don't see any. Thank you very much, Mr. Pannone. So with that, Mr. Steininger.
So moving on to fund capitalizations and transfers included in the supplemental budget. There's a capitalization of the election fund. So this is $3 million in Fed with a 20% match of general funds. This is a capitalization related to that capital project I mentioned earlier for election security. So this is capitalizing the fund that that project is spending out of. There's also a transfer of approximately $1.1 million, the remaining balance of the Alaska Housing Capital Corporation account, transferring that balance into the general fund. Maintaining that balance in the fund does create a lot of administrative costs and work in order to maintain a separate fund. So since it's a fairly small balance in that fund remaining, we'd like to transfer into the general fund and close that account.
Representative Josephson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm hoping that someone, and I can do it. Can you give me some history of, not the HFC fund, but this portion of it? Why was it originally there? When was it put there? Where did it come from? That sort of thing.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I think it would be best to provide you an answer in writing to that because there's, you know, various deposits and various withdrawals from that fund over time, and that might be the simplest way to provide that information.
Follow?
I mean, my confusion is, based on what little I know, I feel like I'm $1.1 billion richer, and yeah. Sorry, 1.1. Okay.
Yeah. Million, billion.
I'd love to be 1.1. It's chump change.
Any comments? I see none. Representative LeBon.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it conceivable that the AHFC subsidiary fund is just Alaska Housing Finance Corporation receipts and its inflow, cash inflow into the agency? That its source is external?
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, my understanding of the AHCC account is that it's not revenue of AHFC, that the funds come from other sources. But I'd like to get back to you and in the answer to Representative Josephson's question, provide more detail.
So just to make sure, that's not a typo. AHFC and AHCC are two different.
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, correct. The Alaska Housing Capital Corporation account is an account that exists within the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. So it's a subsidiary fund within that corporation.
One last bite at this. But the money from Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, it generates its earnings from loans that it makes to Alaskans and Alaska businesses, et cetera.
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, that's correct. However, this specific account is not related to that activity.
Okay.
Please continue.
Under special appropriations and capital items, there's judgment settlements and claims at $131,700. There are also a variety of repeals in the capital projects, either repeals of old capital projects that have finished and have a small remaining balance, and we're directing those into the general fund. There's detail on the specific projects included both in the bill and in the backup materials.
Okay. Any questions on this slide? I don't see any. Any final comments?
I'd just like to say thank you to the large group of subject matter experts who have helped me this afternoon.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you. If we could go back, way back to slide 3. Now, we're looking at a bar graph, so my calculations might not be accurate here, and also, but we do have some totals down there at the bottom. But based on that number down there at the bottom of 238,831, with that number in mind, and I think about the reductions that I know about, we had $100 million in oil tax credit reduction, or we didn't pay that money, $70 million school bond debt, $40 million to the ferry system, obviously, and I know about that one, $38 million in Medicaid, as per slide six, we talked about that, and $25 million to the university. That, to me, is like a total of like $273 million. So when we look at that, when we talk about the savings to the budget, does that mean then that with the reductions of $273 million, but we have that figure of $238 million, did we then, can we say that $35 million has been increased over everything else across the rest of the budget, roughly?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, without checking the math, roughly, yes. There's other cost pressures within the budget that would be unrelated to items that are reduced.
Okay. Okay, that's interesting. So we had a $35 million increase in everything else, $273 reduction in those categories. Okay, thanks.
Representative Johnson.
Yes, thank you for this list in the back, but could we have it a little bit more detailed, especially some of the, they're mainly DOT projects, and it looks like there's one that's about $1.3 million. I would like to know what it is. It would be helpful.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, and for the rest of the committee and folks watching, what was referred to is the ratifications of prior year expenditures, which is included in the supplemental budget. That's where revenue that was anticipated to be collected from the federal government is short of what we anticipated, or other areas where expenditures were greater than that was appropriated, and we can provide additional information on those projects.
And then a follow-up?
Follow-up.
Also, as far as the capital repeals, I'm having trouble finding the detailed list of that. That would be helpful.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Johnson, the projects that are being repealed themselves are listed in the language of the bill, and then we do have some backup documents, and we can give you more information about those specific projects and what they were for and how they were completed.
Great, thank you. As you see, I haven't fully read the bill, but I wanted to make sure I had an idea. Thank you.
I've got a question. One of the things, community assistance. It's something that's been talked about in the halls. There's been no decision whether or not, whether the Senate or the House is interested in putting that in or not. But I believe it was just at historically, looking at this last year, the governor vetoed the $30 million that was to go in, correct me if I'm wrong, and then did not put that in. So that was for FY20. It was vetoed out. And then there is no supplemental for that, but potentially the House and the Senate is, there have been folks who have talked about whether or not that should go back in. If that were to go back in, I don't know if the governor has a position or if there's any clue that you can give us as to whether or not that's something that may be supported, may not, open for discussion. I don't know if you can speak to that. Can you?
Chair Foster, I don't think I can speak to future deliberations on items that may be added.
Thank you. Any further questions? I do not see any. So with that, thank you very much, Mr. Steininger. And I think we will go ahead and adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, February 6th at 1:30 p.m. And at that meeting, we will hear the budget overviews from the Department of Public Safety, as well as the Department of Corrections. So with that, we'll be adjourned at 3:03 p.m. Thank you.